Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours. We've got some interesting guests coming up in the next 2 hours, so stay with us. And the first one's a group that we've never heard of. Well, not so we haven't heard of, but we've never had in before. It's a Yarra Valley Amateurs Radio Group. I've got with me Chris Nelson. Welcome, Chris.
Well, thank you very much, Alan.
And I've got Greg Mange with me. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group. How long has the group been going?
Well, Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group started as the Healesville Amateur Radio Group in about 1988, so it's been around for a while.
Yep.
Originally, their rooms were in Healesville, right next to the Telephone Exchange, which was fortuitous for a lot of the early members because in the exchange itself, there was a bin where all the lineys used to come in and dump their recovered wire, which the guys used to use for making antennas. So it was really fortuitous that they were in that location. Yeah, they were out there for a while, and I believe the building became unavailable to them. I don't know the details, whether it became uninhabitable or the owner wanted it back or whatever. So
both those things can happen, can't they?
Yeah, they can. So they moved to the old Scout Hall in Yarra Glen.
And that's where you are
and
now?
That's where we are now. We're in the process of doing some work on that building to make it a bit more airtight, so it's a bit cooler in the summer and a bit warmer in the winter and doesn't cost us so much to heat and cool. It's all those little things that you can do that can save a few dollars.
So as a group, how often do you meet as a group? Because we're going to discuss what you actually do yourselves, and I guess that's a big part of it, but how often do you meet as a group?
We usually meet on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month.
Yep.
So last night was our actual meeting. We have very, very informal meetings most of the time unless there's something we really need to discuss. So quite often it's just a sit around and have a chat, get on the radio and talk to whoever might be on the air, whether it be within Melbourne or interstate or internationally, as conditions improve, as they will over the next 5 or 6 years, we'll be able to do more international contact.
Why is that, Chris?
Because of the sunspot activity, which goes in an 11-year cycle. We're just coming out of a minimum about December last year. Not last December, the one before. So we're just starting to build up our sunspot cycle.
So let's just take that because you know what you're talking about.
I didn't want to get too detailed into that.
But what does that do? Like, does it allow you to speak clearer, further, or what?
Well, the sunspot cycle affects the ionosphere.
Right.
And when the activity is low, the ionosphere is not charged very much, so radio signals tend to go through it rather than bounce off it. And as the sunspot cycle increases and the ionosphere gets more charged, the radio signals bounce off it and you get what's called skip.
So you want it to bounce off
wanted,
it?
We want that sunspot cycle to be high for skip. But there are other disadvantages in that it can interrupt power supply and things like that. Especially in North America, they have large amounts of power supply affected when the activity is high.
Oh, right. So, all right, it's been going for a number of years. What got you involved, Chris?
Well, I got involved as a cub in 1961 or 2 or 3 or something. I got introduced to Jamboree of the Air, which is an activity that amateur radios and scouting and guiding get involved with, and it's now includes Jamboree of the Internet on the same weekend, so it's sort of modernised and become a bit more computer oriented. So that got me started. Went on, got involved in electronics in physics in secondary school. Decided I'd become a technician with the old PMG's department, which is now Telstra.
Yeah.
Telecom
Australia
that way, yeah. and there was a radio club, an amateur radio club at the training school, so I got involved up there and didn't thought about getting my license, but didn't bother because it was a bit difficult to get the time off to do the exam. And it was a written exam. Now it's a multiple choice exam, which is in a lot of cases a lot simpler to do.
What's involved in the exam, Chris?
Well, for a foundation licence, a basic entry level licence, it's a 1 day course. So you go to your local radio club, or in our case, if we had a group, we'd probably get someone in to do the course. We don't have any qualified trainers at the moment, but we would refer them to perhaps Eastern and Mountain District Radio Club down in Burwood, where they hold courses regularly.
What do you have to know to get that, to pass that licence?
Well, there's a whole book on it.
Is it?
There's a manual that's 50, 60 pages, Greg? Yeah, something like that, which gives you the basics. It's just very basic electronics, how to identify antenna connectors, how to connect a radio to an antenna, how to connect the microphone to the radio, how to connect the radio to the power supply, what you can do to make your antenna more efficient, just basic stuff. And how to make sure your antenna's tuned properly. That's important. This is going to get technical if I go into it too much.
No,
if your antenna's too long or too short, you get a lot of your signal reflected back in the antenna instead of being radiated out into space, which is where you want it to go.
Fair enough.
So you need to get your antenna close to optimal.
All right. Got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more. Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. We've hit 12 degrees. We've gone up one. We've got one more to go and we've hit the top. I have with me Chris and Greg from the Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group. Chris, you were saying off air that you started in CB and a number of the CBers have swapped over to amateur radio.
Well, yes, I think the crossover from CB to amateur was probably what started our radio club. There were a lot of guys that were CBers who decided they wanted to get a bit more technical knowledge.
Yep.
And they went and got their licences and formed the club. And, you know, CB radio is a pretty useful tool within the community as well. We do a Sunday market down in Lilydale, which is run by the Lilydale Rotary Club, and it's on
Great Group Rotary.
Well, it's on next Sunday, and they all their people have a handheld radio with them to communicate. So anything, if they need anything, they just talk on the radio, and everybody hears what's going on. And what we're also talking about CB radio and the crossover between amateur radio and the radios. The radio I have in my car, I can listen to the CB radio channels because I've got them programmed in, because most of the new radios are all computer programmable. So you can set them up for whatever you want. If you buy a commercially made amateur radio, you won't be able to do that. But if you buy one of the Chinese imports, which aren't necessarily very good radios, but you can program it to do that. Now, it's actually illegal to transmit on those frequencies from those radios because they're not type approved.
Right.
Whereas the CB ones that are sold commercially in your car retailers and car spare retailers and whatnot, and electronics stores are type approved, so they're legal to use on those frequencies. So I can listen on those frequencies, but I can't legally transmit on them.
Well, also, when you're driving, like this, is it the same exclusions or the same fines for using a CB as what there is using a mobile phone?
The Act is quite specific. It says in the mobile phone section, it exempts any CB radio or any other two-way radio. So you are legally allowed to use a handheld microphone while you're driving.
Oh, right.
But you need to be careful that you're not breaking any of the other road rules, that you're not distracted, because they can get you for that. And then you're looking at a $400-plus fine.
Yeah, which no one wants. Chris, first of all, I should just ask Greg. I know Greg doesn't want to say much, but he's here, not just a pretty face. Greg, what got you involved in amateur radio?
Well, I've always been interested since I was young. I had a receiving set for many years, and when I approached retirement, I thought I'd expand on it, and I looked for a local club, and also have them in my four-wheel drive, so it's a useful long-range tool.
Oh, great. Be handy if you got bogged out in the middle of nowhere and you needed a hand too, wouldn't it?
It would, or if someone was injured and there's no mobile phone communication.
Yeah, so I'll address this to the two of you. So it doesn't have to have mobile reception, like a mobile phone reception, to be able to pick up the CBs.
No, the CBs are a different story, but the amateur radio, some of the frequencies are long range.
All right, so in your car, we all know what the CBs look like, they're a little thing. So what does the amateur radio in your car look like?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it depends on when you bought your amateur radio. The amateur radio's miniaturisation is amazing.
Is it?
The radio I have in my car is not much bigger than a couple of cigarette packets.
True.
And it's capable of doing a lot more things than a radio that would be the size of some of them were the size of a computer case. But smaller now, so maybe the size of a printer back in the 1970s. They were definitely didn't have the capabilities. But electronics has changed so much in the last 60 years.
Yeah, it has.
And with the advent of computer programming and things like that and the chip technology in them, it's just so versatile that you can do so much with them. I mean, the radio I've got there, if I had the appropriate license, I could use it as a commercial communications radio. So if I was driving a tow truck or something like that, it could be used for that.
So the little one that's in your car, like, can you communicate around Australia or is that too much for it?
It's a UHF VHF radio. So, and this was another point that I was having, but there are repeaters around. All around Australia on UHF and VHF amateur radio bands. The one that our club owns is actually located on the same site as Yarra Valley FM transmitter.
Yep.
And with that, we can talk. Our radios, we talk, maybe 15, 20 kilometres line of sight if we're very lucky and there are no hills in the way.
Yeah, that's in your car you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
But with the repeater, we can cover, right out into the northern suburbs. I've actually, on our repeater, I've actually spoken to a guy in Tasmania when the conditions are right.
Yep.
Owen will come up on air and we'll have a chat. And it's just like he's in the next suburb. It's really, really great.
Chris, what sort of people would you suggest could get involved with amateur radio?
Well, anybody can get involved with amateur radio. You just have to have enough intelligence to be able to sit down, listen to the course material that the guys give you, and it is very basic, and sit the exam, read and understand the questions and decide which box is the right one. So we had I did my advanced, which is the top level exam, back in December.
Right.
And there was a young girl there who would have been 10 or 12 or something like that, who was sitting for her foundation exam. So there's no limit. There's actually no limit in the licensing on age to get an amateur radio license.
Oh, right. No upper or
lower limit.
All right, guys, I've just got to take another quick break. We'll be back with more.
House. Oh, house.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 26 minutes to one. We've gone up at a green hour. We're at 12 degrees, chasing 13, so we'll probably make it with a bit of luck, only just. But, guys, during the bushfires, particularly down in Gippsland, I know they used emergency radio. So is this an application that, it gets often used for?
Well, yes. The Wireless Institute Civil Emergency Network, which is now called WISEN, because I don't think, not sure that they have any association with the Wireless Institute anymore. They have a network of amateur radio operators across Australia who get involved with all sorts of things, and they were in use during the bushfires around Mallacoota and around that area. I don't know to what extent, but I know there are a lot of people standing by to take calls if they needed to, because all the phone lines and everything had gone down around there. There was nothing at all.
Which is going to happen in a bushfire, isn't it?
It is. Yep. I know Wison were very involved in the floods in New South Wales up around Lismore. They did a lot of work up there. In fact, in New South Wales, Wison liaises very well with the emergency services and work integrally with them on communications, providing communications for them.
When you're saying that, what were they actually doing?
Probably just passing messages on between various bodies. I'm not sure. I haven't got any details on that. But I'm certain that they were involved with all that sort of stuff. We don't hear very much about it, although we do hear on the weekly report from the WIA that they've been involved. They don't give us any information, really.
So what they do?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they wouldn't be involved with the like the fire and the ambulance brigade. They all got their own.
They've got all got their own. And in Victoria, the ambulance and police and fire brigade can talk to each other on their digital radios now.
It's that's a good idea.
It's good. Yeah. In fact, a couple of years ago, before the CFA went completely digital, I was listening to them on my scanner going to an incident, and they'd ask for police to attend, and then they'd ask how long are the police going to be, and a few minutes later there was one of the highway patrol units came up on their radio and said that there would be a unit there in 15 minutes. So I've actually heard police on CFA radio.
Have you?
Yeah.
Because I believe too that there is a spot, and I don't want to get off the track of what we talked about, but I do believe that the ambulance, there are addresses they won't go to unless they can guarantee a police will arrive at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, unfortunately, Alan.
I've heard them say that there are addresses that they're very frightened of, that, you know, they've either been before and been hit, bashed and things like that, which
it wouldn't surprise me.
And I know that they do talk to the police and say, well, until you can guarantee a car there, we won't be there either.
So the other thing that Wison do is they do a lot of communications for motorsport, especially car rallies across Victoria. I know the Southern Cross Rally, which is run down in Gippsland, which is a very big one in motorsport in Australia. They get very involved with that. I've been involved with.
Doing what, though?
Just relaying information, doing safety stuff, safety communications, relaying information between control points and a central location so that they can do scoring and that sort of stuff.
So let's just go back one step. You mentioned this motor racing down in Gippsland. So would each of those cars, they wouldn't have an amateur radio, would they? Would they have a CB?
They would have an amateur radio and an operator. And it may be a handheld, it may be a car-based radio. There may be even people, there are people, we could talk about competitions in a little while, there are people who have batteries that they can carry with them and take a radio and an antenna and go out and sit in the bush somewhere and talk. And they can do that at a car rally as well. You can do exactly that.
Very quickly, you talk about Wison and that. What are they?
WISEN is, that's what I've just been talking about. That's the Wireless Institute Civil Emergency Network.
And so what
That's just a group of amateurs that have coordinated themselves into a cohesive group to do this sort of of communication.
So it's not a government body? Or
No. In fact, as far as I know, it's all voluntary. There's no funding for them unless they've got local sponsorship.
So they just basically get together, say, if it was down Mallacoota or something like that, and so they all get together and...
There'll be a group of amateurs down there that would meet as a group, I guess, at various times. They run their own training courses because they have their own procedures, their own communications procedures, which are separate. And because they're part of that network, they're allowed to communicate without using their licensed call signs with amateur radio operators. When we're just in general chat, we've got to use our licensed call sign at least every 10 minutes.
Right.
And at the beginning and end of a series of conversation. So they can get away with... They're allocated a call sign for that particular job. It might be Station 1 or something like that. It could be something completely different. I don't know.
Yep.
But they can do that without having to go through the whole handover rigmarole that amateur radio operators generally use.
We've just got to take another quick break.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Queen. Now, I'm not going to embarrass you guys and ask how many thousands of dollars you spend on your equipment because we've all got wives. But anyway, what sort of cost Chris, for somebody who wants to start off just as a basic to get started?
Right, well, to start off with a basic, you can buy yourself a handheld radio, cheap Chinese stuff. They're not great radios, but they do a job.
Yep.
We use them for short-range communications, but they will talk to the repeaters. An entry-level one of those probably costs you between $40 and $70, depending on where you buy them from.
Yeah.
So that's not expensive. But before you can use that, you need to get a license.
Yep. And what's cost involved there?
Examination fees are $90 for a foundation, or for any of the exams is $90.
Right.
The course is usually about $30, but that includes lunch and coffee and tea and
that's all right.
And things like that. Plus the
and it's all
the
day, training course. Did you say?
And that's all day, usually all day Saturday and Sunday morning for the exam.
Yep.
Licenses will cost you, fees that you would need to pay to the examiner will be $25 for a call sign recommendation. And then the ACMA want $29 to issue a license. They want $4 for a license fee, and there's $50.78 in tax.
So, what's your ongoing cost each year? So, then
ongoing cost is that $4 and the $50.78 in taxes is our license fee at the moment. That is likely to change in the next couple of years. It may actually drop to zero. Well, we're not sure yet, but there is a proposal from, excuse me a second, from ACMA to change the licensing provisions and not charge for it, because it costs them more to do the administration than they get back from it.
Well, when you say a call sign, like, do you have your own call signs like Big Daddy or things like that?
Everybody in Australia has a call sign starting with VK.
Oh, so it's a number, is it not?
So my call sign is VK3CJN. Alan is VK3ACL. Greg is VK3ACL. So everybody can be identified from that.
Who comes up with it? Like, obviously the authorities come up with VK3, but after that, do you come up with that yourself, or do they allocate it to?
You can do it one of two ways. If the call sign's free, you can apply for it.
Yep.
So VK3CJM, which happened to be my initials,
yep,
was available. So I paid the extra money to get it.
Get it.
My original call sign was VK3FMLD, which was a mouthful.
Yep. All right, guys, I've got to take a quick break and then we'll be back with more. Now, get your paper and pencil ready at home. Sounds like a great gig to get involved with, and we'll tell you all about it, how you can sign yourself up.
There were running everywhere, but everywhere is nowhere, and nowhere.
Now, look, you've got us excited about this Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group. I think it sounds like a terrific group. How many members have you got, Chris?
Well, at the moment, we've got 15 or 16. Our numbers have dropped off a bit over the last few years. I think COVID sort of done that to us. So we've had a few members who haven't renewed. Some have moved out of the area, obviously.
Yep.
So we're looking at anyone who is a licensed amateur in the valley who would like to join us. I'll give the contact details in a minute.
That's those that are already. What about you're looking for new members?
And if anybody wants to get a license, we can help you on that way. We can get you into a course and we can let you come down to the club rooms on one of our meeting nights on the second or fourth Tuesday of the month. You can come to the club rooms and you can use the radios with another amateur radio operator in the room with you to make sure you don't step outside the rules.
And those nights, they're evenings?
They're evenings. There's generally someone there from about 6 o'clock and we wind up about 8:30 most times.
Chris, you said that they don't work outside, that they don't wander outside the rules. Just briefly, what are the rules on?
Well, there are rules that limit the amount of power that you can use. Amateur radio operators in Australia are limited to a maximum of 400 watts. Generally, most radios will do considerably less than that. The average radio is probably around 100 to 150. There are bands that you're allowed to use. You can't use the old 27 meg CB band, which used to be an amateur radio band. And you can't get into the commercial band. You can't get into the broadcast band. So you've got to stay within those band limits.
Yep.
And there are things you're not supposed to... you're advised not to discuss politics and religion, which is probably a good thing.
Probably a good thing.
and of course, language restrictions as well. They don't like you swearing on amateur radio, unlike CB radio, where everybody gets away with it being abusive.
if you were caught swearing is probably not the worst thing. Can they take your licence off you or suspend your licence?
They can. They can fine you. They can take you to court. They can ask the court to for you to forfeit your radio gear.
Can they?
Yeah.
All right. So we've got Johnny come lately out there, says it wants to get involved.
Okay.
How are they going to get hold of your group?
Well, first off, our club rooms are in George Miller Reserve on Steeles Creek Road in Yarra Glen. So they can come down and visit us there.
On a Tuesday.
On the second or fourth Tuesday. I got it right that time.
Yeah.
Second or fourth Tuesday. Probably better to arrive 6:30 to 7 o'clock rather than early.
Yep.
They can call me, Chris Nelson, on 0418 348 541.
It's 0418 348 541.
Correct.
Yep.
Or you can email me at president@yvarg, which are the initials for Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group. So it's president@yvarg.org, as an organisation, .au. Or you can email the secretary at secretary@yvarg.org.au. We have a website, which is www.yvarg.org, and we have a Facebook page, which is called Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group -YVARG.
So there's plenty of opportunities. They can either get you on Facebook, they can get you on your, or they can look up on the website. There'll be contact details on your website too, won't there?
Yes.
Or they can ring you on 0418 348 541 and find out a bit more about the organisation.
And please, no phone calls until 2 o'clock. I need to get home and get some lunch.
Fair enough, too. Look, guys, I think it's been fascinating. We look forward to hearing from you again. We'll get you in. You said that you've got something coming up later in the year, so we'll get you in and we'll have a bit of a talk about what goes on then.
Yeah, we can talk about competitions and things like that, which is fascinating stuff.
Greg, you've been involved only a shorter time, but you're really glad you got involved?
Very much, yeah. A good crew of people in the club and got some good equipment. And as Chris has said, we're now upgrading the club room, so it's actually getting better.
And you were saying that you use a lot of yours is for four-wheel driving.
Yes. The CB radio in the four-wheel drive has limited range. Yep. The amateur equipment has much better range. And that's one of my interests, the long-distance communication.
Now, there are... I'll throw this to the two of you just for a brief thing. The CB does have limitations. You know, you can get into spots. Is there many limitations on the amateur radios?
Oh, there are plenty of places where amateur radio doesn't work, or certain bands, certain frequencies don't work. Right. There's a group that I have a chat with in the mornings and in the evenings, and one of the guys goes down through Canterbury Road, down in near the Canterbury Railway Station, and it gets really, really scratchy down there. It's really not a very good spot. So there are lots of spots around Melbourne which are like that, and it depends on what band you're using and whether you're working through a repeater or working what we call simplex, which is one person to another person.
All right, guys, look, it's been fascinating. I guess a lot of us didn't even know the group existed, to be honest. We've all heard about the old, what they used to call ham radio, so I guess this is the same sort of thing.
Exactly right.
And it's been fascinating. Obviously, you can get into it at a reasonable cost, so it's not as though you're asking people to spend zillions of dollars to get involved.
Yep, exactly. And one of those little handheld radios that I was talking about earlier was what I started off with.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, guys, it's been a pleasure to have you in. Unfortunately, it's time for the news and weather, so I'll wish you well.
Thanks very much, Alan.
Thank you very much.
No worries, thanks.